anticipating growth and scale and making decisions in the first restaurant, knowing that you're going to need them at 100 and 500 is kind of a, what I call a wise guy skill set. You got to be around the block a few times to get it.
Welcome to ProCo 360's Pro Business Colorado. This is a show about world-class entrepreneurs who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. My guests know that business in Colorado is special. Past shows, my Audible book list, and subscriber information is available at ProCo360.com. Again, that's ProCo360.com. In this episode, I'll be speaking with Tom Ryan, co-founder and CEO of Smashburger. You've seen Smashburger all around Denver. Since starting in 2007, Smashburger has grown to 400 restaurants in 10 countries. Still, Smashburger is proud to be a Colorado company. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about Smashburger's growth and much more. Tom, thanks for joining ProCo 360.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be here.
I'm glad you are. And first, before we dive in, I want to thank the show sponsors, Community Banks of Colorado. They go big for small business. They've been committed to this show since it started, demonstrating their love for entrepreneurs. And MicroStar Keg Logistics. These guys are entrepreneurs for beer entrepreneurs. MicroStar is a Colorado-based company that helps craft brewers expand by handling the logistics of keg distribution. New to the show is Jones & Keller, a Colorado-based law firm. At Jones & Keller, they know that your business is always big business to you. Okay, Tom Ryan of Smashburger, let's get started.
Let's go.
Sure. How about give us a sense, a picture of Smashburger sort of from the co-founder's perspective about your business, about your market, size and scale and so forth.
Yeah. So, we're in the burger business. Burgers are obviously America's favorite food. In general, it's about $100 billion restaurant category alone, all by itself. And at the same time, what we noticed back in, the turn of the century, turn of the millennium, around 2000, when I was working for somebody else, we noticed that there were a lot of burger sales, but there wasn't a lot of passion left in a lot of customers. Matter of fact, one of the most profound points of view that I've ever gotten doing consumer research is I was working for the biggest burger company. Hmm. And when I was asking about how do you make a decision between us versus some of our other big competitors, I had a consumer behind the glass say, "It depends on who's on the right side of the road." And I actually coined a phrase. It was that dispassion or the latent demand of dissatisfaction is really the vision that I had to go build a burger concept for the next generation that put a lot more occasions into the burger business, a lot more craveability into the burger business, and at the same time, a lot of the more modern values. Mm-hmm. And so that was the scintilla of thinking that led to what eventually turned out to be the Smashburger brand in 2007.
So let me ask you, this isn't one of my questions, and I'm so glad you brought up that whole thing about which side of the street, right? Because you talk about today's values, and I wondered, the first thought that crossed my mind is it different values or is it a different demographic that you're looking at?
Demographics are just numbers, and behind all demographics, it's an outcome.
Yeah, but it's a different person who shops at the biggest one, then shops at Smashburger, then shops at wherever.
But I think it's reflected in more of what the changing values are of the marketplace. And I have this mantra that I use all the time about being perpetually 32. I believe in that. I think that modern brands, to maintain a high level of integrity for the modern market, need to perpetually frame shift themselves to be relevant for the 32-year-olds, which you can talk about later. The point is, though, that 32-year-olds are not looking for yesterday's brands. And it's not because they're yesterday's, it's because they're looking for something else. They want food with a story, and they want that story to make them feel good about what they're eating. And so, and that's a lot of things, a lot of different proof points. I like to tell people it's a mosaic of things. It's not like one thing. And so I think Smashburger was born with this vision of trying to put as many of these core contemporary modern values into play.
I get that, and I still struggle with the notion that you're really not selling to the same person that goes to the Arches.
Right.
Are you?
Well, we do. Actually, we have quite a bit of overlap.
I mean,
we do a lot of tracking of who comes in our restaurants, and we source about 30% of our business from dissatisfied fast food users. Mm-hmm. We source about 35% of our business from people who use big box restaurants, some with burgers and some without.
Yep.
And then the lion's share of where we really compete is in this whole new fast casual market, the likes of Chipotle and Qdoba and Panera and those things like that. So there is some overlap, but I think it's dynamic because as the population, which is demographic, moves through and back to this 32-year-old, mm-hmm, I think they're mm-hmm. the pace setters. They're the opinion leaders. That age is aspirational from mm-hmm. above it and below it.
When and you're is that cool, age always looking for something new?
They're always looking. No, they always define what's modern and relevant in the marketplace for me. And so I like to use them as an anchor point to make sure our decor, our language, mm-hmm. our music, and our food actually reflects that. And as time goes on, you know, we're 10 years old. I mean, yeah. I don't want to be uber relevant for 42-year-olds.
Yeah, yeah,
I want to be
yeah.
uber relevant for 32-year-olds even 10 years later. So I do believe that the dynamics in our business are driven by attitudes, and the demography mm-hmm. is part of that, yep. but it's what you can measure. It's not what you understand is in people's heads.
And how much of that brought me to, you know, this whole notion of you're very proud to be a Colorado company. Mm-hmm. So how much of what you do, you know, what you've just described suits Denver, but might not suit some other community?
You know, I got to tell you, I get asked a lot of questions about why Denver and why Denver is such a hotbed for startup restaurants, yeah. particularly more modern restaurants. I think it's a bunch of things. The big ones are this. First of all, if things work in Denver, they generally work everywhere.
Why?
It's a great test market. It's a confluent market. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people from here, but there's a lot of people not from here. And so, mm-hmm. you know, generally speaking, if things work strong in Denver, they work even stronger on the left and right coasts, mm. which is kind of amazing. So it's a good place to cut teeth, if
yeah,
you will,
yeah.
because it really gives you the insights you need to know where you need to fix or adjust. Second thing. So we got the best backyard in America, right? The mountains are mm-hmm. fantastic, summer, winter, fall, and yeah. spring. And so it's a great place to recruit people. Mm-hmm. It skews relatively young and relatively immortal young, yeah, if yeah. you will. And so to me, it's a really great place to recruit and build staff because a lot of people from other places want to move here. Third, it's a very business-friendly environment here, I think. Governor Hickenlooper and all the municipalities where we do business, it's always been very business friendly. They're very accommodating yeah. to help us with things. So I think that helps a ton. And then I think it's just a young and vibrant place. And
I think there's something about the energy that just yeah. drives growth of a company like
yeah,
yours?
Well, I think it's a combination of having good people come in, people wanting, you know, the population in general to be on the cutting edge of things. And I think they're rapid adopters of all things new and modern
yeah, yeah,
and fun.
Yeah. And so if they see a new concept like a Smashburger or whatever your next one will be, they see a new concept, you think this audience is more likely to embrace it?
Oh, I think it's not at the expense of knowing that you can grow it outside
of
here.
That was my question, yeah.
I think it's really just a matter of, you know, it's a great – Denver tends to be a great reflective market mm-hmm. of what to expect in other markets, and we've proven that with Smashburger.
Yeah.
And I also think that it's just an attitude. I mean, we tend to have a really young population.
Yeah.
There are a lot of 32-year-olds in town,
yeah.
and there's a lot of people who are in the mindset mm-hmm. of 32-year-olds.
So when you mentioned the one question that you didn't address or the one topic you didn't address is funding, because mm-hmm. it seems though that there's more funding coming to Colorado, but it doesn't seem quite as fast as what you're describing as the energy that might attract it.
Yeah. You know, we were pretty lucky because my partner, Rick Shadden, who put this concept together, he was the founder of Quiznos. And so we had our own funding to really grow unencumbered from the very beginning. But I do think there's a lot of private equity interest here in the state of Colorado. I also think that there's a lot of wealth in Colorado mm-hmm. and there's always people looking to put that wealth to work.
So this isn't the traditional venture capital market as much as it is private investment and other kinds of things.
Not for us.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
there may be others around here who are doing that, but for us, it was really, you know, I like to tell people, this was a startup by old guys. You know, Rick mm-hmm. and I are both above 50, and I was and he wasn't when we started this. But the point is that I think we had the ability to do something that a lot of younger cats can't do because we had the capital to do it. We
yeah,
didn't have to go through
yeah.
it. But I have a lot of friends in the business. You know, there's a lot of great startups done by really young people. You know, Pete Jokic at TCOT is a friend of the brands.
Yep.
And he, you know, I watched him go through the process of growth. I point
Pete's
to the
– Pete's been on this show.
Yeah, Pete's great. And then I look to the craft brewers, which is just – I think, a testament to everything I just said earlier mm-hmm. about it being a great state for innovation. It's been a great state for creativity. You know, those, a lot of those people had to find either venture yeah. capital money or other ways to basically get fuel for growth.
All right. So that helps me with there. The other thing, you just brought up innovation. And mm-hmm. and there's a deep curiosity that's been brewing inside me up as I waited for this interview. And that is this notion of innovation in an industry which is hamburgers. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you actually innovate and mm-hmm. own a niche and capture an audience in a way that actually makes them want to come into your store versus someone else's? Mm-hmm. Tell us about the innovation that went on with Smashburger.
Yeah. So you know, everybody has their own definition of innovation, and it's different than invention. I believe innovation is invention with purpose. And my purpose, our purpose with Smashburger was to create a demand-driven burger chain for the next generation of burger lovers. And so with that fixed point in the horizon, we took the time to strive to be differentiated in an added value way at every turn. So like I said earlier, it's not one thing, it's many things. So let's start with our namesake. Smashburger is called Smashburger for a reason. We take fresh, never frozen ground beef. We actually butter, paint a grill, and smash every burger to order.
There's
right?
a great video on your website. If you want to see, yeah. if you want to see our guest Tom making yeah. a Smashburger, he'll show you how.
Right, and those things matter mm-hmm. to this next generation. You know, culinary technique is very cool, and quality mm-hmm. of ingredients are very cool. And if you think about the paradigm of most burgers being consumed away from home. Most purveyors or the biggest purveyors don't do it that way. They have frozen beef. They're cooked more methodically and process driven instead of culinary driven. And so at the very core of our namesake is probably one of the best examples mm-hmm. of how innovation, which is inventing that process with the purpose of getting a great tasting, juicy burger you could mm-hmm. taste in every bite. And at the same time, have the storytelling above the line to be able to tell people why this is different and have a video that shows them yeah, why this is different. Yeah. That in and of itself in the burger industry is an innovation mm-hmm. because it was purposefully designed to deliver rational and emotional benefits for our customers.
So my skepticism is here.
Sure.
And I'm going to toss it out. You said go ahead and fire away if yeah. I had a question like this.
Sure.
Do the customers really know the difference, or is it marketing so they believe they know the difference?
Yeah, you know, it's a little bit of both. I mean, I think all brands have an emotional and rational benefits. I will tell you that a Smashburger done right is unbeatable. It is. Everybody tells me that this is, if they're older folks, they say this is a burger like I haven't had in years. Mm-hmm. If they're younger folks, this is the best burger I've ever had. And so I really do believe that people are a bite away from believing that the story makes a difference. Mm-hmm. But I do think that, you know, since we're new, I think you have to have critical points of differentiation that make yeah. us interesting and intriguing to people, at least for one bite.
So the taste, the one bite, validates what you say.
I agree.
Yeah, and that's what keeps the momentum. That's what builds.
I believe that. And it's not just, like I said earlier, it's not one thing, it's many things. Because I think if we just did classically designed burgers, like our classic, you know, which yeah, is very yeah. traditional ingredients, I think that would cater to a segment of the market that's really, you know, historically burger centric, but this next generation is looking for other things. And that's why we do things like the spicy Baja or mm-hmm. a truffle mushroom Swiss burger or a Colorado local burger mm-hmm. in every market, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Because people, you know, this next generation is very experiential. They're looking for the next new thing. They're looking for badges they can call their own. And so having these other kind of food forward points of difference, yeah. even in our basic recipes, makes a lot of sense.
Well, you mentioned demand driven. And before I get into that a little further, I want to remind our listeners that they're listening to ProCo 360. I'm your host, Dave Tabor. This is the show featuring entrepreneurs and business leaders who could be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. And I'm interviewing now Tom Ryan, co-founder and CEO of Smashburger. And Tom, you mentioned that you want to be demand driven, and yet it seems like you're creating a product that you want customers to want, but who's first? Are you coming up with these ideas, or what does demand-driven mean if you're the ones creating them?
Yeah, what I think is, like I said, the original space in the marketplace that we saw was what I called the latent demand of dissatisfaction, which is people were so used to eating commoditized burgers.
Commoditized and bland, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that they thought that was the industry. And until somebody showed them a better way and proved to them that it could be close enough to me, affordable for me, mm-hmm. and relevant for me, that until they saw that, they were pretty happy with the status quo. Because in the early days, I got asked over and over, another burger concept, yeah. we can throw a rock from one to the other.
Well, that's kind of like, what I was thinking.
Yeah, but if yeah. you taste our burger, it mm-hmm, really right. does mm-hmm. define taking, you know, America's favorite food to a level it hasn't been in ever for some
yeah.
people
yep.
or not for a long time for
well,
others.
Well, it and is reminiscent. It is reminiscent of that old-time flavor
mm-hmm.
that that I remember from a kid.
Yeah, no,
you know, it is.
It is. I mean, that was some of my early inspirations. I grew up in Michigan, and you know, there were mom and pop places
exactly,
that were
right.
absolutely fantastic. And you know, a lot of them use a technique similar to ours, but not nearly as engineered for scale
yeah,
like
yeah.
ours is.
Yeah, well, I mean, less that's a good way to put it. Engineered
yeah.
for scale.
Yeah.
So, most of your restaurants now are company owned still, right?
Yeah, so of the, call it 400, we own about 60% of all those restaurants. And then we like to be the biggest franchisee mm-hmm. of our own concept.
Yeah.
I think it keeps you relevant and smart and in tune. Well, and then we franchise yeah. the rest of it in mm-hmm. smaller markets where it makes sense for us.
Yeah, and it does seem that companies, franchisors that have owned at least a significant number of their own businesses seem to get it better than those who've built a business and all of their stores are franchised. They don't. It just seems that you're able to keep them more relevant. Is that a reasonable perception?
Yeah. Look, I mean, it's my favorite way to answer this question. It's like I heard somebody once say that, you know, why does the Pope not get to make a point of view on birth control? And the answer is if you don't play the game, you can't make the rules. I kind of espouse that in the restaurant business. I think we really have to be hard at work every day. You know, making the center of our universe within the four walls of each and every Smashburger. That's the way our support center is set up. That's the way everybody in our business thinks. And I think without that, you become less of a partner to franchisees and more of just a revenue stream, you know, collection agency. And I think that's one of the sins of the past. If you want to talk about what I've learned at other companies, it's like, in the end, all franchise relationships lead to antagonism unless you take a modern brand and wrap around it a modern approach to franchising, which I think we've done at Smashburger.
Yeah, I think there have been lessons that have been written about in the newspapers and so forth, or there are franchisees that didn't feel very good about the franchisor and so forth. But it seems to me that since you own more than half of your stores, if you see same stores sales declining, you can't just complain to the franchisor, can you?
Correct.
You have to do something about it, then you can pass that along. And that seems like a really synergistic way to have a relationship.
Look, when you're the biggest winner and you're the biggest loser, whatever the trends may be, you are motivated to act on behalf of the whole system.
I think it sounds like a winning drive,
yeah.
you know, that way to go.
You bet. And so we believe in that.
So what have you learned? You've worked for some big brands before. And is it true that you're the inventor of the stuffed crust Pizza Hut?
I am.
You're, you know, what better innovation in the world before Smashburger, right?
Yeah.
So what have you learned from some of those big brands that you think you're bringing forward? And what are some of the things you've learned that you think, wow, I'm glad I don't have to do that?
So that's a really great set of questions. I mean, probably the biggest thing I learned working for big brands is, and for anybody out there who goes to work for a big brand, remember this, that mm-hmm. in general, big brands over time end up hopelessly surrounded by themselves. And what that means to me is they're mired in their operating platforms, they're mired in their people's expertise, they're mired in their own mm-hmm. culture.
Yeah.
And the way to stay dynamic, and I'm, you know, look at what drives me in my life is to make creative, impactful changes to things that are meaningful in the marketplace. And I love that idea.
Is that your mission?
Kind of. And when you go to big brands, you know, they have these rules. And I think what I've learned, you know, from them is don't let the rules get in the way of the brand width that they actually deserve. And like when I did Pizza Hut, and did stuffed crust pizza, they were known for pan pizza. That was their thing. And all the big things I did there involved flanking pan pizza instead mm-hmm. of supporting it, because that becomes mm-hmm. marketing's job. Mm-hmm. And so that was a real breakthrough for them, because we actually taught that company that they were more than what they thought they stood mm-hmm. for through that particular product development effort. And there's other examples like it. So the biggest people with the most potential to do the biggest things tend to get stuck in what they've already done
mm-hmm.
and get a little risk averse. And so I've always kind of been a more higher risk profile than a lot of big companies have an appetite for, but I think I've navigated those to get some big wins in those big companies. So I learned that.
Yeah, yeah.
I also think that there's a role to play for big companies to maintain and I think it's accelerated in the recent decade, they have a role to play to stay contemporary. And I think they have a really tough time with that. And I think when we read about big companies struggling, I think, again, it's that hopelessly surrounded by themselves mentality that they can't even feel or see because they're in the wind every day.
It's such a strange, and so many of those companies, of course, are driven by quarterly earnings, being public or this. Why do you think that any of us on the outside look at them and say, you're too big to innovate? You've become disinteresting. We don't even care about what you're doing anymore because you're too big. And yet they keep getting bigger. What is that about? You've been there.
Yeah. I don't think the problem is too big. I think they view their bigness as a lack of nimbleness, and it drives to a fear factor about change. And I got to tell you, I mean, the brands that I respect, I think the brands everybody would respect, are brands who change at the right pace to be perpetually 32, perhaps, in the marketplace at any given point in time. And when you stop doing that, especially today, with all the access to information and access to everything you want at your fingertips, you get passed up very quickly. And so I think there's a mandate for innovation. And, you know, I was in these big companies when I had a chance to do it. It was great and it was fun. And I value that
experience.
Was
it really great? It sounds awful because when they don't want you to innovate, you want to.
It was great to do. It was great to prove it to them that they could do it. Mm. It was hard to keep doing.
Yeah.
Because the minute you hit another plateau, they were willing to stay there.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so to me, it's like, you know, I didn't want to become this bouncing ball around the industry, but I stuck with places long enough to make an impact that had enduring value and then moved on to the next place where I could do a frame shift change.
Yeah. So what did you learn that you think is useful and is of value from the big companies that you needed to use to make your concepts successful?
Yeah. So I learned an awful lot about professional development and culture from these big companies. I mean, they really do invest in their people at a premium. And I think that's really great. But I also think that the biggest thing was great run big companies. And I was with Pizza Hut when they were part of PepsiCo. And they were great after that too. But when I was there, it was PepsiCo, and they took great pride in rounding out their people to give them opportunities and perspectives that went beyond their technical skills, if you will. And they were also really great at long-term. They taught me the notion of long-term customer value and how to do things with enduring value, which I think was really seminal to me and my kind of DNA when I was young. It was my first big job in the restaurant business working there.
Was what, customer value?
To understand long-term customer value through brand equity. And that was really important facet for me to understand, which simply means, and to the layman, that you know, investment quality development, doing something like Stuffed Crust, which is now in its 25th year, is an important kind of thing to focus on instead of just short-term connect-the-dot kind of hits. And they were great. The other thing that's really great about big companies is well-managed big companies is they orchestrate every department to a fixed point on the horizon. And when I've spent some time in smaller companies and even going back in to run Smashburger, I just went back in November, you notice right away when you've come from that background how important it is to have each and every department focused on common things like excellence in the field or profitability, because those are the big things that really drive momentum.
You know, it seemed to me too, the one other thing that you might bring from a big company to a new concept is this notion of process. Because, you know, winging it, no matter how charming that feels, right?
Yeah.
You can't really scale winging it, can you?
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring that up. I mean, I've lived in that wind my entire restaurant career, so I'm in it all the time.
Yeah.
But I will tell you that anticipating growth and scale and making decisions in the first restaurant, knowing that you're going to need them at 100 and 500 is kind of a what I call a wise guy skill set. You got to be around the block a few times to get it. And what's really tough for me is, you know, I go to a lot of conferences, I speak at a lot of engagements, and I'll have young guys come up and say, hey, I just started and I'm making it up, but I just started this hot dog stand and I have three of them and I can't get over this hurdle. Yeah. And it's like you need to almost go in and sit with them and say, what's your process?
Well, putting you on the spot then with this question is, what decision can you think about making in your first restaurant or two that you think, wait, I can't do it this way because it's not scalable?
Well, I mean, anything that's really two things. Anything that's hugely labor intensive needs to get thought about really hard. And I don't mean managed out. I mean thought about so you can deliver the value added of that labor, which with as little actual working steps as possible. So that is clearly.
What's an example of that in your business?
Sure. I mean, so I'll give you a great example. And sometimes you can get it early, sometimes you can't. So we do a really great grilled chicken sandwich at Smashburger. And the problem with cooking chicken breasts is they're slumped in the middle. So by the time the insides cook, the outside's overcooked, and it takes a long time. So we actually were marinating and pounding chicken piccata style in the early days of Smashburger. And it was a lot of work, and it was really messy, arguably not food safe, you know, because we were splattering raw chicken juice out. You know, we were covering it with paper and doing our best. Yeah. But to me, we knew very early on that we were either going to lose our chicken business or we were going to have to find somebody to help us
this
scale
wasn't
that
scalable,
really quickly.
Yeah.
Right. So that is a great example of taking the work out, maintaining the benefit, because what we wanted, you know, one of our operating philosophies at Smashburger is cook it fast, get in and out of it, if you will. So our burgers cook in a minute and a half, and our chicken sandwiches cook in about a minute and 45. And so we needed to maintain that to make sure the orders went out at the same time, but we needed to figure out how to plane those chickens down and get them to the right level. So it's just an example of where we're taking process out really mattered. The second big thing, and perhaps even bigger, is when you're scaling, you realize very quickly, coming from big restaurant companies, that you're not going to have the kind of founder's vision in every kitchen the way you have in the first restaurant, right? And so doing whatever you can to take discretionary decision-making for consistency out of our platform is really important. That's why
you look for that? How do you find those moments?
So it's really fun. I mean, it's really funny. It's a funny process because I think again, we had the benefit of being around the block a few times when we started. So a great example is this. You know, we don't make our own buns in a restaurant. It's a lot of work. It's in quite frankly, the technology around centralized baking is really great these days. Yeah. But we have a bun. Our bun at Smashburger is engineered. Every bun that's too high gets blown off a line by a jet. Mm-hmm. All of them are laser guided water cut. And the reason for that is when we drop those into our toaster, they have exactly the right dimension to compress them once we roll them in butter to give us this really nice shell flavor development, but it keeps all the juices in the burger. That was a control point from before we opened the first restaurant.
And you knew this was scalable.
We knew that if we did that, if we had a vertical toaster and we designed our buns through this bakery to do it, that we would never have to look in our rearview mirror about bun quality issues again.
That's a great example.
So even though we look fairly simple to the people that we staff our restaurants in, it's simple for them to operate. There's a tremendous amount of engineering built into all the critical steps that take the discretionary decision-making away from the people in the restaurant.
Okay, so my question about that then, this is now it's coming to me, the thing I've always wondered. So when you engineer food and it's consistent and it's a consistent experience, is there a certain customer that says, I don't want something engineered. I want something that's crafted. This whole notion of handcrafted food. How could something be handcrafted if you've engineered it?
So engineering doesn't mean lack of handcrafted. It just means what you craft it with is engineered. And so we have these hand smashers that we designed, and they're proprietary to us. They're actually patented, which we still paint. We still ball burgers. We ball up meat every morning, and then we put it on the grill on butter, and then we take hand smashers and smash them ourselves. Yep. So is that engineered or is that handcrafted? The answer is it's both. And it's both for this reason, that we are hand smashing every burger to order. But the design of that tool, the dimension of its depth and the breadth of its width relative to the weight of the meatball gives us just enough back pressure to get this great caramelized sear on our burger every single time. And in the absence of that, if we were doing that with, say, the metal lid to a mayonnaise jar, we would be taking the slings and arrows of that inconsistency, but we've spent the time. And these little tools, they cost $300 a piece. We have six of them for restaurants. It's, you know, we can't lose them. Yeah. They're essential. But it's highly engineered, but it doesn't mean it comes – engineering does not mean – processed. It means It means designed to give us a desirable, you know, in our case, a very desirable differentiated outcome, but with precision, which is uniformity and consistency.
Well, and yet in today's world, obviously you need that, but you know, it's that messaging. It's that feeling as a customer. If you're going to go someplace, it's not one of the massive food chains, you know, and I, your explanation's a good one. Thank you. Let me ask you this. You've talked a lot about what you've learned in your career. When you were a kid, I know you've got three grown kids now, but when you were a kid, is this anything you wanted to do? What did you want to do?
You know, that's a tough question for me to answer. So I've always been here's my earliest recollection. God bless her. My mom was not a great cook. She had her moments where she did things that were great. But I can remember at the earliest age getting really excited to go to a restaurant when I'm 60, so it's been a while, right? I mean, this is in the mid 60s.
But you were 32.
I'm repeatedly 32. Yeah, but I just turned 60, but back in the mid 60s, I mean, I can remember with a lot of excitement going to restaurants, and it was just because the level of I've always been enamored with eating away from home. And I can remember when the first McDonald's came to Grand Rapids, Michigan, where I grew up, and my mom and dad took us there, and it was like a delight, right? So I've always really relished the whole occasion of eating out, but I never really thought I would build a career into it. So I went to Michigan State. I'm a Spartan. I studied food science as an undergrad.
You have a PhD. A real PhD.
But I studied the technology behind food. And when I got out of school with a master's and a PhD, I went to work for packaged goods. And I realized that the technical side of food was only half the equation. I was smart enough to realize that this whole food trend around the aesthetic side of food, the European mantra around food about it, everything matters. I was smart enough to see that starting to build and made the transition instead of chasing restaurant trends to put in packages. I thought I could do a better job creating restaurant trends. Mm-hmm. So I made this kind of dark side move for a PhD food scientist
to go
into the restaurant business. And ever since, but I loved it. It was real time. Mm-hmm. It was creatively dynamic. Mm-hmm. You could make things happen in months instead of years.
Yeah.
And I just kind of fell in love with it. And so my passion really peaked once I connected the creative side of food with a deep base of technical knowledge, proactive technical knowledge to pull some things together.
That's kind of cool. It's kind of cool that your education actually served you in that direction. I remember reading some articles in Popular Science, I think, that had to do with the science of cooking food and all that. You know, and you mentioned engineering of processes and so forth. I mean, there is some science and chemistry and all that thing involved in making great food.
And look, that's where kind of it used to be that technology side people borrowed as much as they could from culinary. And now it's actually gone the other way. I mean, a lot of this whole molecular gastronomy trend coming out of Spain, and all the guys who are running the coolest restaurants, Alinea, you go back in their kitchens, it looks like the labs I was in when I was in grad school.
Yeah.
They're extracting this, they're fuming that, they're doing all this great kind of technical stuff. So it's really kind of melded into kind of left and right brain coming together to make really interesting attributes for customers.
Hmm. Well, you've said you're 60, 32 mentally. Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. You're only young once, but you can be immature forever. I've always believed that, right?
True.
So how many more of these do you have in you? That's my last question.
Well, you know, Smashburger's been great. We're a decade old. We're on the growth path. We're leaning into a category that I think definitely needs reinvention. So that's going to take up some time. So I'm happy to work on that. But Tom's Urban is our second big concept. It's really kind of to define a much more millennial experience around some combination of sports bar and entertainment bar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're placing these things primarily in really we love what I call density and urgency. We like to go where there's a lot of people who are in a hurry. So we're part of a bigger entertainment picture. So we're on the Strip in Vegas. We're across from the Staples Center at LA Live in LA. We're in a lot of casinos where we're not the most important thing of the night. We're second or third on the list. But that's been a really great boon for us as well. So I have those two, and I probably have another, you know, a couple areas I'm kind of passionate about still, but we'll wait and see how these two work out and see if I have bandwidth.
Cool. Well, thanks for joining me today, Tom. I appreciate it. Tom with Smashburger, co-founder and CEO. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, on ProCo 360. And as you've been hearing, Tom Ryan, co-founder and CEO of Smashburger, which is a Colorado-based franchisor that's grown from startup to 400 locations in 10 countries in just 14 years. Again, Tom, thanks for joining me.
A pleasure, Dave. Thanks for having me today.
Happy to. And again, I'm your host, Dave Tabor. Thanks again, too, to show sponsors, MicroStar Keg Logistics, Logistics and Community Banks of Colorado. This show and past shows are available at ProCo360.com. Go there to subscribe. Again, that's ProCo360.com. Thanks for listening.